Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Hokum, Ask E. Jean, and Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars.
Well, as so often happens, I want to talk about a horror movie today. They do just keep coming out, don't they? One after another. And this is another one that's proven pretty popular and has gotten mostly good reviews. And so, you know, I would say it's not a bad movie. I don't think it's a particularly good movie either. I say that so often, I should sort of abbreviate it, a GNG, good, not great. And in the case of Hokum, which is the name of this movie, it is, by the way, Hokum, basically. But I would say it's pretty good, or not bad, but certainly nowhere near great. Anyway, it's a movie which is both written and directed by Damien McCarthy, who specializes in horror films, has made a few of them. And in this case, the main character is a writer, and he is played by Adam Scott. And he goes off to Ireland because his parents have both died and he has their ashes. And there is a place in the Irish woods where they went on their honeymoon back when they were a happy young couple. And he's decided that it would be really nice to sort of bury their ashes there. So that's what the setup of the thing is. Now, what's interesting about Hokum is that the main character, played by Adam Scott, his name is Ohm. That's his first name, O-H-M. Ohm Bauman is his name. Is that he's a really obnoxious character. He's a horror writer himself, or something like that, apparently. At the very beginning and the very end of the film, we see little dramatizations of his latest novel that he's been writing. And he appears to be sort of maybe slightly modeled on somebody like Stephen King. I don't think Stephen King is obnoxious. And yes, I have met him and talked with him at length. But this character is very, very obnoxious. So here we have him. He's off in Ireland on this sad duty. And as soon as he arrives, he starts to meet people. He's staying in an inn out near these woods where he wants to bury the ashes. And he meets a barmaid and he meets the guy who is in charge of the place and the owner of the place. And they're colorful characters, each in his or her own way. But then, yes, the mystery starts. It turns out that the honeymoon suite, and remember, his parents, Ohm's parents, were on their honeymoon when they had their happy time in Ireland years ago. So the honeymoon suite may be haunted. And for that reason, it is always kept completely locked up and absolutely nobody is allowed up there. And the guy who's in charge of the inn has to check on it every single day to make sure that it's still locked up. So, okay, that's a bit of a mystery. And then, and this is pretty early in the film, so this is not really a spoiler, then the barmaid disappears. Where is she? What's happened to her? Could she have been kidnapped or killed or whatever? And again, there's various colorful characters running around the edges of this story. Ohm, surprisingly, for some reason, which I don't think makes a whole lot of sense, decides to investigate all this. And the next thing you know, he's up there in the supposedly haunted honeymoon suite, and he's poking around, and he's discovering the mysterious mechanism that makes the elevator go up and down, and it turns basically into a haunted house horror movie. So, okay, there's nothing wrong with haunted house stories. They've been around for centuries, maybe millennia. So this is really what this turns into. And after a while, it's a lot of sort of scuttling about and hiding and staying away from what may be supernatural menace and what definitely might be real, just regular human menace. And there's some local sort of police guys who are also in the story. And anyway, it all sort of, after a while, to me, became not all that interesting. It's so often it happens with movies, and horror movies, but other kinds of movies too. At the beginning, when you're being brought into the story and you're being introduced to these new elements, it all seems quite interesting, and you really wonder what's going to happen, and you're caught up in it. Then, as the mysteries begin to get solved, it's sometimes becomes not so interesting after all. And that's the case here with this. It turns into, again, kind of a hide and seek in the haunted mansion. And other things happen too. There's an eccentric old guy who lives with his drugs out in the woods, and he turns out to be a pretty important character in the story. And there's another guy who has a crossbow, and he's definitely very menacing. All these different elements. So again, you have maybe some supernatural stuff, definitely a whole lot of human stuff, and basically a lot of horror. There's some gore in the movie, not an inordinate amount for a modern horror film. And again, it's not a bad movie. I can't say it's an especially good one. Anyway, Hokum is definitely Hokum, but I had a reasonably diverting time watching it. And okay, that's my story on that one. Next movie I'd like to talk about is Ask E. Jean. This is a documentary, and the next film I'm going to talk about is also a documentary. So, of course, the E. Jean of the title is E. Jean Carroll, who went to court against Donald Trump. This is definitely something that requires some courage. And she did it. At one point in the movie, she remembers somebody saying to her, "But Trump's got 200 lawyers." And that's probably true, but she did it anyway. So the deal was that E. Jean Carroll was an advice columnist. And actually, her lawsuits against Donald Trump, of course, were big headlines and all that. And by the way, yes, she won both of them, huge multi-million dollar settlements. But that's late in the movie. That takes up a good part of the film, but we also find out just a lot about E. Jean Carroll herself and what her life was like, and her growing up and stuff like that. She grew up way up in the high reaches of America, up in Montana, and then she came to New York, and of course she became an advice columnist. And she wasn't just a sort of the old-fashioned Ann Landers or Dear Abby kind of advice columnist. She was a modern, feisty, liberated woman advice columnist who told women to stand up for their rights and said all kinds of naughty and provocative things. And she made a real name for herself, and she started getting published all over the place. She had a column in Elle magazine, and she wrote books and all that. Very successful writer in the genres that she took on for herself. Then came the big confrontation with Donald Trump, and we hear her side of the story. We don't especially hear his side of the story, although it's in the movie, of course. And the idea that they ran into each other at Bergdorf Goodman department store in New York, and he was a very famous young real estate developer, well, youngish, younger than he is now. Real estate developer, and she was this famous advice columnist and writer. And then, according to her side of the story, they went up to a dressing room because she was going to give him advice on a gift to buy for his girlfriend or his wife. I can't remember. And then, according to her, he sexually assaulted her in this dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman. He has always denied this and continues to deny this. And of course, his denial is one of the most notorious parts of the story. He said, "She's not my type." Or, as she puts it at one point in the movie, he basically said, "She was too hideous to rape." Anyway, that's how she saw his attitude toward the whole thing. But she claims that he really did that. What she claims is a sexual assault that really did pass over into out-and-out rape. And again, he has always denied this, but she went to court against him and she won this enormous settlement because he had said that she was lying. And that was what really enabled her to mount this big successful court case against him. Then, after winning this big defamation lawsuit, he went right on defaming her. And so she went back to court and she won a second great big defamation judgment against him. So he, as we all know about Donald Trump, whatever we think of his politics, he doesn't seem to be able to keep quiet. So anyway, that's why E. Jean Carroll gets this big movie made about her and why she's so famous and all of that. And it's interesting to see all this play out. Now, I have to say that the movie, again, it's called Ask E. Jean, and it is very much her side of the story. And I have no problems with it. I certainly can't disprove anything that she said, but it is, especially at the end, it is very triumphalist. It's, yes, she went to court in this righteous cause and she won. And I wish that the movie were at least a little bit calmer about that part of it. I mean, she did win these cases. By the way, she still has not gotten a penny of the actual judgments, apparently, still being refiled and appealed and all of that. But I just wish that the movie were a bit calmer and a bit more judicious and a bit more of sort of a multifaceted portrait of this big, important series of court cases. That said, it's an interesting movie. It gives you a lot of background about E. Jean Carroll, and whatever you think of the lawsuit and what Trump may or may not have done, it's interesting to hear her side of the story at great length in this movie. So, yes, it's a worthwhile documentary. I recommend people watch it if they have any interest in maybe in Donald Trump, certainly if they have any interest in E. Jean Carroll. The movie was directed by Ivan Mirapol, who keeps the thing crackling along at a pretty good pace. It's only about an hour and a half long, and I found it informative and sometimes fun to watch, and sometimes even funny. So it's not a bad documentary. Now, my next documentary and final film for today is an old movie. It's from way back in 1987. Robert Wilson, a very, very, very great stage director who just died recently. And that is apparently why this movie is being revived and put back on the circuit again. It's called Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars. And I have to say, Civil Wars is punctuated in a funny way. It was the title of a show that Robert Wilson was putting together. And the word civil is all uppercase, all capital letters, because it's meant to be about not fighting wars necessarily, but all different kinds of wars, even wars that civilized people have when they're being civilized. And then wars, the uppercase S at the end, because it's not meant to be just the American Civil War, but civil wars in general. Anyway, the movie is called Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars. Now, I said Robert Wilson was a very famous stage director, and I knew him a bit, by the way, and I talked with him a few times, and he was a very nice fellow, in my opinion, and a very, very, very great artist. His easel, you might say, where he created his art was on the stage. He did a little video work too, but mainly he did work on the stage, and he wasn't just a director. He was a designer and a choreographer and a lighting specialist, and he did everything to create beautiful works of visual art on the stage, very avant-garde. I'm not sure he ever told a story in his whole career. He eventually became an opera director, and of course, the operas have stories. But he was not interested in storytelling. He was just interested in creating beautiful, lighted, colored spectacles on the stage. I just recently, just a very few weeks ago, saw one of his works in a revival in New York, Moby Dick. He had a lot of ambition, even doing things like Moby Dick. Well, this movie, Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars, directed by Howard Bruckner, was made back in 1987, and it's about the big misfire of Robert Wilson's career. Sometimes his shows would go on for hours and hours. His most famous work is Einstein on the Beach, created with a very great composer, Philip Glass, and that's about 4.5 hours long, and some of Wilson's works are longer than that. The Civil Wars was supposed to be something like 12 hours long when it was all done. And it was going to be composed of several different sections created in different parts of the world. And he was supervising the creation of all these different stage spectacles, which ultimately were going to be combined and presented at the 1984 Summer Olympics. So that's what it was going to be. Actually, it was supposed to be 12 hours long when it was all done, putting together these different segments being created in different parts of the world. Well, some of the segments were done. I remember seeing some of this when it was actually performed without the whole work, but just some part of it. I saw some of that because I followed Wilson's career pretty closely. He was a very, very great artist of the stage. But he was never able to get the money to put together all of the sections and have them presented at the 1984 Summer Olympic Games. So it was, in that sense, a misfire, even though some of the individual pieces of it were eventually created. So that is what Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars tells us about. And you see Robert Wilson at work, and not only on work, directing stuff on the stage and controlling the lighting and telling the people how to move and so forth, but you see another part of his work, which is being on the phone. Call J. Paul Getty. I need some money. I'm sure he can kick some in. And stuff like this, really, really being a business entrepreneur, trying to put together the money for this huge, gigantic, spectacular stage production. Again, it never came off, but the putting together of it makes a very, very interesting and fascinating saga. So, again, if it had ever happened, this work was going to be something like 12 hours long. The movie's only about an hour and a half long, and it gives you a lovely overview of this. And if you have any interest in the theater, especially in the modern avant-garde experimental theater, if you have any interest in the very, very great and recently deceased stage artist Robert Wilson, then this is a movie not to be missed. Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars. I knew Bob Wilson a bit, and I had a wonderful time watching this, and I just found it a fascinating account of how both pure artistry and ordinary money have got to go together if you're going to create some kind of a modern stage extravaganza. So that is my somewhat documentary story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Hokum, Ask E. Jean, and Robert Wilson and the Civil Wars.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera National Theater Live and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.